Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tech Doctor Podcast. Really happy to be with you for another event here. And this time, I'm talking with Jesse Rathwell, all the way from Canada. Jesse just got back from CSUN, and she's going to tell us all about that. But before we get into that, Jesse, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, like Robert just said, my name is Jesse, and I'm a student right now studying creative writing and media studies, although I'm finished in about 3 weeks, as anyone who's following me on Twitter knows, and I'm very excited about that.
So you're about to graduate?
I'm about to graduate.
Cool. And then what?
And then moving back to the big city and getting a real job.
Oh, man. Real jobs are nice because they pay you and all that stuff, but they also cut into your free time.
Yeah, they do. But if you love what you do, then I figure it shouldn't be that bad. I'd really like to try and work for Apple. I mean, I know everybody wants to work for Apple, but I really want to work for Apple. So, kind of hoping that maybe eventually I'll get a dream job with Apple. But
oh, good luck with that.
That's a dream.
Yeah, it's a great dream, though. It really would be fun to work for Apple. And I know that you are a big Apple fan, because the first time I met you was at an ACB convention, and I was giving a talk on Apple and what they're doing with accessibility, and you were at that presentation.
I was, and I live tweeted the whole thing, except the 3G really sucked in the room, so my live tweeting didn't really work, but I attempted to live tweet the whole thing.
Well, you did live tweet it, and you also recorded it, because I have an audio recording of that.
Yes.
So that was very cool that you did that.
Yeah, I like to record sessions and stuff. I actually recorded all of my CSUN sessions as well. I'm not actually sure that I should have done that, but I did.
Okay. So really the reason that I asked you to come on the Tech Doctor Podcast was to talk some about CSUN, because you're one of the people I know that was there, and it's been pretty recent, just a couple weeks ago. So if you can, just give us a little overview. What was CSUN like for you this time?
It was awesome. I've been to CSUN probably 4 or 5 times. I can't even remember how many times. And yeah, this time definitely did not disappoint. There was lots of trends that I saw, new things going on, a lot of new stuff with HTML5 and a lot of iOS and Android comparison. But what I enjoy most about it is the camaraderie and the sense of connection that I feel with everybody there. Us CSUN people, we call it the tribe. And the tribe is, I know there's some exclusivity with the word tribe, but we don't mean it that way at all. The tribe is completely open, and pretty much, you know, if you were there, or even if you weren't there, if you're interested in accessibility, you're all part of the tribe. So, you know, being there and seeing many of my fellow tribe members was just awesome, and learning from them and just networking, and okay. It was a fabulous conference.
Excellent. So I just realized that, just in case there's anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, CSUN is an annual conference on all broad range of disability issues, a lot of technology information, and I suppose other kinds of presentations as well. I've never had the good fortune of being at CSUN, so I'm count me envious. But
you should go.
Yes, I intend to. I will go sometime soon. But it's in San Diego, California, which would be a great place to go in the wintertime and enjoy the nice San Diego weather and so forth. But that's what CSUN actually is. And so it sounds like you have quite a network of people that you typically meet up with at CSUN, and that seems to be one of the parts you like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really cool, because even people who I didn't meet there, like before I left, I was tweeting on the hashtag CSUN12, and I found that I met a lot of people on Twitter, and then when I met them in person, it kind of felt like I already knew them because I'd been talking to them on Twitter and tweeting back and forth and following them. So I actually joked that I wanted to put my Twitter name on my name tag instead of my because I tell people my name and I'd be like, oh, I'm Jessica, whatever. And they'd be like, oh, it's nice to meet you. And then I would say, oh, I'm Canadian Diva on Twitter. Oh, my gosh, I know you. I'm following you. And
that is funny because
it was funny.
I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't actually know your name.
No. So, yeah, I met a lot of people on Twitter who I then met up with at the conference. So that was really neat.
Isn't it amazing how Twitter and social networking has changed the way we meet up with people at conferences and the way we interact with people all the time? It's really, I was realizing that today was, you know, Twitter's sixth birthday, and it's just hard to imagine how much that has changed the face of the way we communicate just in the last 6 years.
Oh, exactly. Especially at things like conferences where you have a hashtag and it's a way of sorting out all the tweets by that particular subject. So everyone is tweeting on the hashtag, whether you're there or not, you feel like you're there. And it's a great way to connect and for people who unfortunately can't attend these things to sort of feel like they're there and to be a part of the tribe, even though they're not actually there in person. So I love it.
Yeah, you know, I sort of had mixed feelings about it not being there. I did follow the hashtag, and a lot of what I read was people just communicating about, you know, where they wanted to meet for dinner or what they were doing during the day or something like that. And I mean, that was kind of interesting, but it wasn't a lot of real new information about what was actually happening at the conference. And there was some of that, but it's all mixed in with everything else. And I guess that's the one downside that I thought of it. There was a lot of stuff there that would have been much more interesting to me had I actually been in San Diego and been able to go to some things as opposed to just reading about it. So I kind of had a mixed reaction to it, although I'm much happier that we have it. I'd much prefer that we have it than we don't have it. So I'm glad people do it. But it was, I was a little surprised to have that reaction.
Well, I'm definitely guilty as charged. I sent out a couple tweets. What's everyone doing for dinner?
Well, why not? I mean, of course.
It was really funny, though, because I sent out one of those tweets on, like, I think the first or second day I was there. I didn't have dinner plans, and I wanted to meet up with some people, so I sent out a tweet on the hashtag, what's everyone doing? And someone who wasn't even there, like who lived in my city, just tweeted me back and told me what they were having for dinner.
Okay.
I was like, okay. Don't really care, but
yeah, right, right. Well, yeah, I know. You know, years ago at the conventions, at least at the ACB conventions, a lot of us would use ham radios to communicate in that way, and I'm sure people still do that. I would still do that some at a convention, but primarily, I think people are on Twitter, on the social networks, and so that
absolutely it
really has changed a lot. Well, you mentioned that you went to some presentations dealing with, I'm really interested in both the whole HTML5 things that you learned about and also the iOS versus Android. Tell us a little bit about some of that stuff.
Well, iOS versus Android, there was two sessions. I only went to one of them. And they did kind of a head-to-head comparison between iOS and Android. And from within the first, like, 10 minutes, it was clear that iOS was winning. It seems like Android is getting there, but maybe they're not quite there yet. And this is just my personal opinion, so, you know, don't send me hate mail or hate tweets. But yeah, it seems like Android's on its way, but it's clear that it still has a little bit of a ways to go.
Well, I think with all of its fragmentation and so many different phones and so many, some of them with touch screens and some of them not, and some of them with keyboards and some of them not, and all of them running different versions of Android and some of them capable of being updated to Ice Cream Sandwich and some of them not being able to being updated. And I think it makes a much more difficult environment for accessibility to thrive the way it does in iOS, where you're only talking about an iPhone and an iPad and, you know, maybe a couple different models of iPod touches and all, but the platform is so much more homogenous that it's incredibly easier to make it accessible, I think.
That's what I think too. And that's definitely what I found during the presentation. I mean, they were running the latest version of Ice Cream Sandwich that just came out the day before or something. And, you know, iOS 5.1. And even, like, the interface of Android just seemed really complicated. You had all these weird grids, and it seemed like it wasn't user-friendly. And I consider myself to be a pretty tech-savvy person, and I was like, what? Like, I don't get this. Just give me, you know, the simplicity of iOS. But even to turn on the accessibility features, you have to draw a rectangle on the screen, which is something that I didn't know until I went to this presentation.
Yeah, and it's probably something not everybody knows how to do.
No, exactly. I'm thinking, for me to draw, and I don't know how exact it has to be, but that's not something that blind or visually impaired people would necessarily know how to intuitively do.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the early days of Windows, you know, where the screen readers were trying to figure out how to make the GUI accessible and all that stuff. And it was pretty convoluted and complicated. And as the years have gone by, it's matured a lot and gotten simpler. It just seems like Android has a lot of maturing to do, and iOS, for the various reasons that we mentioned, has matured a lot faster.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. Although it looks cool, it looks like it has some neat features, but yeah, just mature a little bit.
And I think it's good that, honestly, that there's the competition. You know, I think I'm hoping that Android accessibility will eventually get to the point where it pushes on Apple accessibility to do more innovation.
Absolutely. Healthy competition is never a bad thing. I'm absolutely 100% for this mainstream accessibility movement, and I think that Apple has revolutionized it, and it's caused us to think about assistive technology and accessibility in ways that we never have before. But I think that is one of the drawbacks, if there can be any drawbacks to mainstream accessibility. That would be it, is that things are constantly being updated, and because accessibility isn't the main focus of a mainstream product, then things are more likely to break.
Yeah, you're right. That is true. That's been my experience. On the other hand, though, it's so interesting to me that, you know, when you really stop and think about it, Apple has so many more resources than any specialized access technology company does, just because of their wealth and their power and their popularity.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, granted, we don't have any control over how much of those resources they allocate toward accessibility. But even so, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, if something needs to be fixed, Apple's going to fix it because they have the resources to do it. And they're going to probably do it in a pretty timely manner.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. I mean, they seem like they're very responsive on their accessibility team, and that would be my dream job. If I could do anything, I'd love to work on the Apple accessibility team. I'm going to work up to that. But
excellent.
Yeah, they seem like they're very responsive to our feedback, whether it's good or bad. And
well, they just started an accessibility phone number, so they need you. You know,
they do. I'm telling you, I want to call up that number and just ask somebody, "How did you get your job?"
Yeah, because
seriously think I should do that.
You're getting out of school at just the right time to go do that. So I'm going to be hoping that works out for you. Back to CSUN. You know, I know it's a huge conference. I could tell from looking at the program and looking at people's tweets and all that there are just dozens, hundreds of sessions, it seems like, and a big exhibit hall, and I'm sure thousands of people.
Oh, it was very hard to pick sessions because there were so many good ones all at the same time. And it was like, how am I, like, there were a couple time slots where I wasn't sure which one I should go to, so I just wrote down all of them. Uh-huh. I was like, I can't decide. I'm going to decide when I get there. It was like, there is so much. I would compare CSUN probably to, like, it's like the CES of assistive technology.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good comparison. Well, how accessible was the program? How easy was it to choose, to look through and see all the sessions and choose the ones that you wanted to go to?
It was very accessible. The CSUNconference.org website had the sessions all up there. They did it a little bit differently this year. In previous years, they've had it where you, if you wanted to go to a session, you would click a little save link, and it would save you a seat. And then after you finished going through and taking all your sessions, you would have your personalized little notebook of all your sessions.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked that better. They took it away this year, and I'm not quite sure why.
But you couldn't assign yourself a seat this time?
No, you couldn't do that, which is a little bit unfortunate. But I still got to go to most of the sessions that I wanted to go to, so that was good.
I think I heard there was some sort of iOS CSUN app. I assumed that it was showing sessions and times and all. Did you play with that at all?
I'm not sure if there was an app. I know there was a mobile website that you could go to, and okay. It was really cool, actually. Yeah, I did look at it. It had all the sessions. It had the restaurant menus and, what else? The exhibit hall list, I think, and just tons of stuff that you'd need to know while you were there. I think it would be super cool if they made an app, though. But, yeah, this mobile website was really accessible and really handy, and I think they really went all out this year in terms of, apart from not being able to save a seat, which I really like, but they really went all out in terms of making sure everything was accessible and concentrated on mobile a little bit more, which is super cool.
So given all the people there with all the mobile devices and everything, were you actually able to get 3G connectivity? I mean, could you actually log in and use that mobile site when you were in the restaurant, say, or when you were looking for your next session to go to? Or could you tweet out, you know, was it usable, or was it just too slammed?
Oh, no, it was usable. Before I left, I didn't use the mobile site probably as much as I could have, because before I left, I put all my sessions into my iPhone calendar. So I just had them all there.
You did your homework.
I did my homework. Yes. Yay me. But yeah, I definitely was connected all the time. There was no Wi-Fi in the lobby, at least that I could find, which was a little bit annoying when you were trying to go down there and meet people. And I'm from Canada, so I was trying not to use my data connection because of roaming charges.
Right.
But I was bad, and I ended up using it anyway because I had to stay connected. I was like, there's no Wi-Fi. I'm trying to meet people, and I just feel jittery if I'm not connected. So yeah. I'm turning on my 3G data.
Yeah. We were in Europe last year, and that's really how I felt, you know, because you just couldn't afford to use it. It's like, whoa, part of me is missing now.
Exactly.
But I'm sure it's the same kind of deal coming down from Canada. Was it difficult to navigate around as a person who's blind? Was it hard to get where you needed to go and everything, or how did that work?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I mean, that could just be me, because I met up with some friends there who were like super navigators, and they just knew where everything was. And I always struggle a little bit with navigation.
It's hard.
It's hard when you're in a big, especially like in the lobby area when everything's open and you're trying to find, you know, one specific restaurant or something. And it's like, I don't even know. But then there's some people who just, bam, they know. So I don't get it. But there was lots of volunteers around. So I spent a lot of time wandering around until I found a volunteer and asked them, you know, where such and such room is. And they were really good about walking with us there and helping us out. But no, I have to say that I don't think as beautiful a hotel as the Hyatt is, I don't really think it's the most accessible. I think they could definitely improve. I mean, it's cool that they had that mobile thing with the menu on it. That was good because none of the restaurants had Braille menus.
I see.
And yeah, navigation, the place was huge. Even the volunteers were like, oh, I need to go find a map. Like, it was huge and spread out and hard to navigate. And the elevators, it was hard to know which floor you were on because although they beeped, there was some extra beeps, so you couldn't even count the number of beeps. And I had some elevator adventures.
Yeah. You know, I've gone to a number of conferences and things like that by myself, and it is with a dog or with a cane, either one, it is a really big challenge, and it can be fairly stressful if you let it be. You know, I mean, it can be pretty nerve wracking, and I finally learned after a while just to, you know, relax and do the best I could and not get too worried about things. But the truth is that does make it more difficult when the place is so big and complicated, and it does make it more stressful.
It does. It's kind of a love-hate situation. I'd never want to go with a sighted person. I mean, my parents went, but I didn't really see them. I tried to stay away from them as possible because I'm an independent person.
Right.
And I don't want to be hanging out with my parents. I want to go see my friends.
Right.
So I would never, I don't think I would like to go with a sighted person because I value my independence that much. But at the same time, I did find it frustrating when I got lost all the time. And I was like, oh, I'm just so sick of getting lost. I wish I could just understand this. So I loved it and I hated it at the same time.
And it just, you know, it just makes it take longer to get where you need to go. And it's more complicated than it seems like it would have to be if there was some really great indoor navigational system that would,
exactly,
you know, be there to help give you some pointers about where you were in relation to where you were trying to go. And I hope those things will be coming along in the next 5-10 years, and we'll start.
Every time I go to CSUN, I see some session for an indoor GPS navigation thing, and there was even one this year. I didn't go to it because I went to another one, but it seems like everybody has this idea to make these things, but they never come to fruition, and there's always some reason why not.
Yeah,
if someone could develop an app, or I'd buy it, like, that would be so useful for a hotel or a big... And also, the one I would really like to see is, like, Find My Friends, except more.
Yeah.
Something that would pinpoint someone's exact location and be like, okay, Robert's iPhone is 2 feet to your right or something.
Exactly.
So that I'd be like, hey, Robert, I'm over here. And, like, I'd know where you were so I could holler at you. Like,
yeah.
Because finding your friends is also difficult in those situations.
Well, it is, you know, and one of the hardest things about it is that people who are blind can be in the same room and not know that the other person is there.
Exactly. They could be standing right beside each other, and until you say something, you don't know the other person's there. It's like,
yeah, and that sort of makes the whole idea of networking more complicated, more difficult in a way.
Exactly. You can network absolutely fabulously on Twitter and social media, but then you go and try and meet somebody, and it becomes a really big challenge. I missed one of my lunch dates because I was following my friend to the restaurant, and then somehow we ended up losing each other.
Yeah.
I got lost, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Story of my life. And so, yeah, we ended up missing our lunch time, which kind of sucked. And it's like, if there was some kind of an app that would be like, you know, you're following this person, and it would just give you directions and, like, track the person. Or I'm actually, in one of my classes, it's kind of a diversion, but it's a user, like, designing user experiences class. And so our assignment is to get into groups and come up with an idea that we'd like to see. And so I chose to be the team leader for my group, and so I got to pick it. And I chose this whole idea of a Find My Friends app that would be more than just the one that Apple put out, something that would pinpoint exact location and give you the option to follow somebody. And I mean, it sounds kind of creepy if you're a sighted person. And I mean, I guess even for a blind person, it'd be like, you know, you could stalk each other. But
yeah,
from a useful standpoint, if something like that was actually developed, unfortunately, in my class, we don't have the means to actually develop it. So we're just going through the design process. But if it could actually be developed, it would be the most amazing thing. I don't care if I had to pay $100 for that thing. I would do it. It would be so great.
But, you know, it's not really that far-fetched when you think about it, Jesse, because the foundation that has been laid with some of these Find Your Friends apps and Find Your iPhone apps and so forth, I mean, it's not going to be that long, I don't think, before we're going to have something like what you're talking about. I hadn't really thought that much about it specifically for, you know, being an app to help you follow someone at a conference or something, but that's not that far from what we have already, really.
Right. No, I think it. What we have already could just be enhanced a little bit more, and we would have it, as well as an indoor navigation thing. Like, why not? I mean, I think that the possibilities are endless, and the technology just needs to sharpen a little bit, and we can make some really amazing things that will really change our lives and make things like conferences in some ways a lot easier.
Yeah, I do too. Well, were there other sessions besides iOS and Android that really resonated with you, or that you got excited about?
Yes, I went to a lot of web accessibility sessions because I'm getting into web development and learning HTML and CSS, and I thought, well, you know, obviously I want to learn more about accessibility and have that be a focus, and so I went to a lot of those sessions. I actually chose the web track over the blindness track a lot of the time. And one session that was probably my favorite of all was one that was about the web accessibility community collaboration. And it had its own hashtag. I believe the hashtag was hashtag WACOL. That's right, web accessibility collaboration community or something. But it was an incredible session. It was talking about how we can extend the community, and I know I've talked about this one specific thing in another interview that I recently did for my college radio station. They had me on their podcast called Be the Media, and I was talking about CSUN because it really ties into our media studies department, and I brought up this there as well. But this one session, and particularly this one part, I guess you're probably following Jennison on Twitter, and everybody knows who Jennison is. He was talking about how we just need to expand the community and bring in people that we wouldn't normally think of as being part of the accessibility community. And he gave the example of CAPTCHA. And, you know, we all hate CAPTCHAs, and grr, this thing has a CAPTCHA, and why? But he brought up the point where, like, nobody's ever gone to the security companies and asked, why are you using a CAPTCHA? And so we don't really understand it from their perspective. We just know that we hate it. But if we went out there and really tried to understand their perspective and tried to help them understand our perspective, I think we would find that there would be a lot of better solutions coming on if the community stretched beyond CSUN and these big accessibility conferences, and we took in other people who we wouldn't normally think of. And they also, in this session, talked a lot about going to other big conferences like South by Southwest and CES and all these other huge technology conferences that don't have a lot to do with accessibility, and mixing a little bit of accessibility in and getting people excited about it. Maybe, I mean, those conferences are huge, and if you were to do a whole session about accessibility, it might compete with some other ones, and you might not have a very good turnout. But if you mixed it in with a session about the latest in robotics, and, you know, this could really help someone with disabilities, or HTML5 from this perspective, and, you know, accessibility, so sort of sneak it in there and get people excited about it. And yeah, that's really what this session was all about, was expanding the community. And that was a huge takeaway for me. I'd never hadn't thought about reaching that far outside of the accessibility, the community that we already have at CSUN and on Twitter and all these other places. And so it really opened up my mind and my eyes to really think about all these other people, this whole wide world who doesn't know, and just trying to bring them into the community and try to understand them and help them understand us. And I think that if there was more understanding on both sides, then we would see a lot of accessibility improvements. And
well, those are great points.
I feel like I just went on a huge ramble.
No. I think those are excellent points, and I'm glad you brought it up, you know, because we are starting to see that happen outside of the disability community. I mean, I had Allison Sheridan from the Nocilla cast on.
She's awesome.
On the Tech Doctor podcast, and she did a presentation where she blindfolded herself at the big Macworld iWorld conference and did a demonstration of how you could use VoiceOver on both
Excellent.
The Mac and iOS, you know. And so, I mean, someone like her who's a mainstream podcaster, a mm-hmm. sighted woman, to get that get interested enough in this area to do something like that as a presentation is a very cool thing. And that's, I think that's exactly the point you're making, at least one of them, is that mm-hmm. we need to reach out and get more people involved and need to do more presentations at mainstream conferences. I mean, I really agree. You know, I've seen it happen just in the Apple community a lot with software developers. Just mm-hmm. just today, for example, I was listening to a podcast, and it was the Mac Power Users podcast, which is a really great one, with David Sparks and Katie Floyd, and mm-hmm. they were talking about Google, and they mentioned on their podcast an app that lets you back up Gmail, Google content, including Gmail and anything that you've got in Google. You can use this app to make a backup of that on your Mac in case, you know, something ever goes wrong with Google or your information gets lost somehow. You have a backup of it. And so I contacted the developer. The app is called Cloud Pull. And I contacted the developer and asked him, you know, is this app accessible with VoiceOver? And he wrote me back and said, no, I'm sorry that it's not. And I wrote him back and said, would you be interested in working on making it work with VoiceOver? And I'd be very interested in helping you test it and helping you do that. And he wrote me back and said, yes, I would. And I'll look into it and I'll send you something to test as soon as I have something. So, I mean, you know, when we see things like that happening just by exchanging some emails, and hopefully he'll actually follow through. It sounded like he would, and I'm confident that he will. You know, what a cool thing that is if we can start building this interface between developers who have no knowledge probably or no interest in until we contact them about accessibility and actually make something happen. That's a very cool thing. And that sounds like that's exactly the type of information you all were talking about in that session. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. That's exactly what we were talking about. And I've had the same kind of deal with iOS developers. I find that they're very open for the most part to making their apps accessible. And yeah, they may not know. A lot of them don't even, a lot of sighted people I know don't even know about VoiceOver. But
right.
then you tell them, and, you know, especially if they're a developer, they get intrigued. And, oh, you know, absolutely, we'd like to make this accessible. They really embrace the Apple spirit of, hey, you know, we want to make our apps and our hardware and software accessible to everybody.
Yeah, I want to make it
work by everybody. And the developers really seem to embrace that, and I think it's a fabulous thing.
It is. It really is. Well, so I know that, you know, CSUN in addition to all the great presentations you've been talking about, I know they have a really large exhibit area where there are all kinds of products there. And I'm just curious to know if you spent time in the exhibit area and if you saw anything that was particularly interesting to you, or what that part of it was like.
I did. I spent a little bit of time there. I didn't spend as much time there as I probably could have because I was usually off socializing or at sessions. But I did definitely spend a little bit of time there, and I saw some trends. It seems like nowadays people are making smaller Braille displays to work with iPhones and Androids. And actually, now that I say that, I don't even know if Android has Braille display support, but iPhone anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome because, you know, even a couple of years ago, it was like, why would anybody want to use anything smaller than 20 cells? And now you got little 12 cells. The Braille 10 was one that I saw, and there are some other ones that are similar. And yeah, just little tiny Braille displays. Everybody had one of those out. I saw something that I thought was interesting. It was I think it was made by View Plus, and it was essentially a huge tablet that you would pre-program things into and then place a tactile map or a tactile diagram over top of it. So when you touched part of the diagram, it would tell you what it was that you were touching. Or if there was a sound effect that you could attach to it, like I think one of the ones that I saw was a diagram of, had something to do with the weather anyway, and there was a sound of the ocean that was attached to the ocean. And I just thought that was super cool, and it wasn't very portable, but it was a cool concept that you could use for spatial awareness.
Yeah, very interesting concept. I look forward to it'll be fun to see how that does or doesn't develop.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it smaller so you could carry it around, maybe. I saw something that I'm kind of not sure how I feel about. They had regular PCs that ran Windows 7 that had Braille input keyboards on them.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it's like a note taker that runs full Windows instead of Windows CE or Windows Mobile or whatever it is now. I'm so out of touch with the Windows community that I don't even know.
did they have a display, a Braille display, or just the keyboard?
I'm trying to remember. I think it had a Braille display. It was like all one unit. And I guess I like that, but I'm all about this, you know, if you can use QWERTY and mainstream, like totally mainstream, then why not? So I don't know. I kind of didn't really like that. But I guess that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I heard someone mention that product, which they were kind of describing it as essentially a Braille laptop.
Pretty much, yeah.
Was running Windows 7 and a Braille keyboard, and I think a Braille display also, which I'm sure, you know, makes it very expensive. I'm really excited about Braille. I use it a lot, and I love my Braille devices, and I read a lot of novels in Braille. It's really become even more important to me as I've, you know, gotten older. Somehow I started to decide to slow down and actually take the time to read something as opposed to listening to everything at 12 times its normal speed, you know?
Right, and that's awesome.
And so I really am thrilled to see more emphasis on Braille displays and Braille devices, and thrilled to see the price coming down, but the price has got to come down even more.
It's got to come down a lot. I mean, it scares me the way that people talk about Braille and how it's dying, and I agree with you. Like, if I'm reading a novel, if I'm not listening to it is an audiobook form, I'd rather read it in Braille. And sometimes if I'm reading an email or something, I find it's more emotional if I read it.
Yeah.
And I feel you. My literacy is something that I value over a lot of things, and it makes me sad to think that people don't think Braille has a use anymore. But if they want to get Braille literacy back up to the level that I believe it should be, then yeah, they need to bring the price like way down.
Yeah, that I just really hope that can happen in the next few years. And I've said it before on this podcast, it's just so important that we get Braille out to to blind students and blind adults and everybody, because we need that written language. And I'll keep myself from going off on my tangent about that.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure I would agree with you that if you can't read large, or, yeah, if you can't read large print or Braille, you're illiterate, I think.
Yeah, I feel that way about it too, and I know we've kind of let that slide in some of the schools and so forth over the years, but I hope we turn that around because it's too important just to let it go, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, do you have any other comments that just come to mind that you want to make about CSUN? It sounds like it was fascinating. It sounds like it was fun. It's like you met up with people and had a good time. It was frustrating at times, and so it was a mixed bag, but it sounds like overall it was a good experience.
It definitely was, and if I can go back next year, I'm already excited. I just want to, just the whole networking thing and all the people that I met and everybody, I just think it's incredible how all these people can come together, and some of them are blind or deaf or in wheelchairs or have autism or whatever, they have disabilities, but then there's all the developers and designers and programmers and teachers and people who don't, and accessibility gurus and experts, and it seems like disability is an issue because the conference is about disability, but it's not an issue because everybody just treats everybody so equally. And I feel like it's one of the few places in my life where I can feel valued. And I just feel so inspired to have been around all this knowledge and to have felt like I fit in. I mean, I may not be able to code as well as these people, or I may not know as much about whatever, but I still felt like I could have conversations with them and like I was respected. And one of the sessions got really heated, actually. It was about, oh, what was it? Does accessibility have to be perfect? And it was a fabulous session because it was emotionally charged, and there was lots of opinions, and there was a sub-conversation going on during the session on Twitter that got quite heated, and I posted my opinions, and a lot of people disagreed with me on Twitter. And at first, I kind of felt like, I hope I have friends at the end of the session.
Yeah.
But then I started to realize, you know what? This is the kind of place where people can disagree with me and I can disagree with them, and we can all just still be friends. We can have those kind of conversations and still come out at the other end valuing what each other has to say and respecting each other. And I just think that whole sense of community between so many different backgrounds and disabilities and abilities and groups of people, cultural backgrounds, everything is just incredible. It's probably the best part about it.
I am so glad.
So inspiring.
I'm so glad you told me about that, because it really makes me want to go next year. I think I'm going to just make plans to do it. I should have gone this year, and I got busy at work and just said, I'll just not go. But that's the kind of community that I really am looking for, and I would really thrive being a part of. And I think it's fine that there is some disagreement and also that emotional tension, you know, because these are topics that we all really care deeply about. So we should have some emotion about it. We should
exactly
express some of that. Otherwise, you know, what's the point? And without the passion, not much happens. Not much moves forward. People aren't very influenced by what we say if we don't feel anything about it. So
absolutely. And there was a whole lot of exciting passion. I mean, I still think about it, and I'm still just like, wow, that was such a great conference. I wish it was like 2 weeks longer. I miss my tribe.
Yeah. It is only a few days, and so I'm sure there's just a huge amount that everyone tries to pack into those 3 or 4 days. And wow, it's exciting though. I'm going to really make an effort to be there next year. I think I would learn a lot and really benefit.
Oh, you would.
Yeah. Well, Jesse, thank you for being willing to take a little of your time. I know you're busy with school and the homework and everything else you have to do, but you were very willing to come on and talk to us about this, and I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor, and I know we've been talking about doing a podcast together for a long time, so I'm glad we did it.
Yes, we finally did it. Do you have any contact information that you would like to leave for people? If you do, that's great. If you don't, that's fine too. But just in case people want to get in touch with you, do you give anything like that out?
Yeah, absolutely. I love to meet new people, and I love to talk about this kind of stuff. So, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Canadian_diva, or you can send me an email at independentdiva@gmail.com. That's all one word, no underscores, all lowercase, independentdiva@gmail.com. And you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/JessicaRathwell. Again, all one word, no underscores.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for being on The Tech Doctor. And if you all want to contact me about something that Jessica and I have talked about, feel free to email me at techdoctor123@gmail.com. Till next time, so long from The Tech Doctor.